All right, sir, continuing on, why don't you open your Bibles to 1 Kings 15. We're probably going to spend most of our time here. We'll bounce over to 2 Chronicles a few times to add in some missing pieces for the two kings we're going to look tonight. We're actually going to look at four, but really two are just really quickly. Their reigns are short, and there's not a lot written about them in either Kings or Chronicles. So we'll kind of hit them fairly quickly. They're just kind of in the line of succession, and really their only happenstance is who they're related to and who their sons are going to be. But as I was studying the last couple of days, it's starting to get more and more depressing as we look at these kings, as we look at the people, and we look at the choices that they make, especially in the northern kingdom in Israel. We're going to see after from the divided kingdom, from Jeroboam on, there's not going to be, in God's eyes or in the Bible's eyes, a good king. They're all going to do evil. And so there's not going to be a positive note we can kind of spin it on these guys from the north. And then kind of the kingdom of Judah, we're going to have a mix. We're going to have some good, we're going to have some bad. But really, we're just kind of counting down the years until we hit captivity, when God's finally had enough, and the people are brought back to where they kind of came from. Remember in the Judges, they were sick and tired of being put into captivity for doing wrong, and that's why they wanted a king to protect them from that. Well, we're eventually just going to get there, and they're just going to have to deal with it. And so until the time of Jesus, and Jesus is going to come in and metaphorically save them from captivity and being under the reign of sin and Satan, and so of the old laws. So we kind of had that. So let's look at what we got going on here. We got the kings of Israel and Judah. So what I did today is I did a little chart. We know Saul, David, Solomon. So kind of looking at just through the divided kingdom. So we got the kings of Israel on this side, and there's not going to be a positive king or a good king on this side, and we're going to have some mix and match over here on the right, as we said earlier. But we're going to be looking at mostly tonight at King Asa and his neat disposition, and how how certain things skip a generation or two, and so kind of the good things that God had given Solomon and his family that kind of missed Rehoboam kind of get to Asa. And then we're going to look at Baasha, which is kind of the opposite end of Asa. And they're kind of going to spend most of their time, and there's going to be a lot of warring between these two kings. But if you notice, there's a few kings kind of in the middle between those. And those two kings are Nadab and Abijam. He's actually going to have two different names. He's actually going to be mentioned later in Matthew, but he's going to be a king of Judah. He's the son of Rehoboam, so kind of in that line of it. But what was noticeable about his name, I have a little Bible dictionary. It's like Hitchcock's Bible names, and they kind of have a name and what the name means. We don't know much, but his name means father of the sea. We don't know if he liked to fish or if he had a boat or whatever, but that's just kind of what his name means. But he was the son of Rehoboam. He was king of Judah. He's going to reign for a short period of time, only 3 years. And so he's roughly mentioned here in the first kind of eight verses of chapter 15. And then he's also going to be mentioned from the time of David to Jesus. We know in Matthew chapter 1 where we see the genealogy and kind of the list of how we got to Jesus. He's also going to be mentioned there, but his name's going to be spelled a little different. So he's mentioned there as well. He's not going to be the most standout of guy. Reading in verse 3, it says, "And Abijam walked in all the sins of his father, which he had committed before him, and his heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God." And so, kind of the sins of the father falling down and picking up where the father left off, as we know, with Rehoboam. And so we kind of see where his heart was. It was with the idols. It was with what Rehoboam left off to him. And so his heart wasn't fully there. And so he's going to spend most of his reign, because we know that Rehoboam didn't last as long as Jeroboam. Jeroboam reigned I think, 5 years longer, that his reign's going to be mostly up against Jeroboam, and they're going to be at war, and we're going to constantly see over the next 200 to 300 years just war after war after war with the north, so civil war over and over and over again. But his claim to fame is in a war with Jeroboam and Israel. He's going to get in there, and he's going to, in 2 Chronicles 13, he's just going to overwhelmingly just destroy on the battlefield Jeroboam. And so his claim to fame is one battle win, other than his reputation of not being a good king, but an evil king. So that's all we fairly know about him, not a ton. So, but then on the flip side, we have Nadab. If I can get the clicker to work here, even better. So we have Nadab, and so he's the king of Israel, the son of Jeroboam. So we see the two sons and kind of the contrasting style. We can find that from 1 Kings 14. He's going to reign just even shorter than Abijam. He's going to reign just 2 years. Now, if you notice, we went from with Saul and David and Solomon reigning for years and years and years to now God's having, it seemed like from my study, he's having less and less patience with these rulers that he brought up that did evil in the sight, and he kind of acts them. Asa is going to have a very long reign here in a few minutes that we'll look at, but that's because he did a lot of positive things, and his kingdom started early, and we'll look at that a little bit earlier. He was a kind of a child king as well. And so Nadab is also going to be like Abijam, an evil king. And so in 1 Kings 15 and verse 26, and he said, did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of his father and in his sin, which made Israel sin. And so they just picked up where dad left off. And it's actually just kind of sad because they had a chance to start fresh, start new, but part of me is thinking, you know, just from a psychological part, well, you think, well, you just, that's all you know. That's the way dad led. That's the way he, the idols he took. But then again, it was a requirement, and you can look back, that each king was to have the law taught to him. So they have the opportunity to know right and wrong, follow God's commands, lead him, look to God, don't look to idols, don't look to vain worship. They have the chance, and they just chose not to. So I wanted at first to lay the sins of the father and say, hey, it's just dad's fault. That was the example he taught. Well, no, they, like everybody, had the opportunity and just chose not to. It led him down this road. And so it's just really disheartening to see the way God's people and the people that are put into place lead. And so what's going to happen to Nadab is, who we'll look a little bit later, is Baasha of the house of Issachar is going to conspire against him, and then he's going to strike him down. He's going to murder him, and then while they're out laying siege. And so we'll find out a little bit more about Baasha, but just quickly to fill in the story here, to just kind of make some thoughts on this, is Baasha might have been one of the commanders in the army that kind of rose up, didn't like where things were going, maybe didn't agree with some of the decisions the leadership had, decided, well, I need to take my own kind of recourse, go at them, take them out, and then lead them the way I would have. And so he's going to take over next, and we'll look at him later. So, but I thought as I was just looking through, and I kind of just mentioned, why don't you turn over to Exodus 34. Neat little verse talking about kind of the past sins and going forward and the iniquities and sins. Because I immediately, as I started following this, because I don't have kids of my own, I don't have heirs yet, I would like to get to that point. I just have, from this standpoint, a father and a mother, and I would like to make all of my faults and my sins dad's fault, right? And mom's fault. That's how they trained me, right? That would be the easy kind of get out of jail free card, right? But they did teach me right, and I have read my Bible, and I know what's right and what's wrong. And so it really just falls on me, right? Because at the gates, when I'm being put on trial or I'm put in front of Jesus and God, it's not going to be what my parents did. They're not going to ask me that. Paul was referencing, and I've only seen a little bit at Chick-fil-A, that Mark Zuckerberg, the guy on Facebook, is on trial, and Congress or whoever is doing the questions, congressmen have time to ask questions, and he's on trial for himself. They're not asking what his parents did or what his predecessor did. They're asking, hey, what did you do? What did your program do? What did your network do? And so that's kind of what we're going to be at. And so looking towards the end of verse 7 of Exodus 34, it says, visiting the iniquity of our fathers on the children and on the grandchildren to the third and the fourth generation. So you can kind of see that's going to happen. So I started thinking about that, and I thought about, well, what does Jesus say about this exact topic? He says, well, it's not about family, it's not about your friends, it's not about someone else, it's about you. And so Matthew 10, verse 37 says, he who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And so these kings may have loved their father or maybe thought that's the way it should be done, but the sins of the father and the mistakes that they made kind of passed down, and they decided that was just the way it's going to be. And so it's interesting to note to not let family or friends or maybe the people you looked up to at one point. I wonder how many up-and-coming, I don't know what Facebook would be described, social media guys that are looked up to Mark Zuckerberg or now what they're thinking. Think, oh, well, that was my hero. That was my idol. That's how I based everything on, my algorithms, my post, or my however I want to design it, how they're led. They say, I remember as a kid, that you to never meet your idols, because as soon as you do, you'd be disappointed. And that's why I will never meet Ken Griffey Jr. I won't do it. I had one opportunity. He was signing. He was old. He was, man, was he back here? Maybe he was, but he was at a Safeway, and they were doing a thing, come down, you can get a ball signed, and there was a line, and I had a chance, and I thought, don't do it. He's old, he's not the same sleek, strong guy, you're going to be disappointed, and then what if he treats you like a jerk? Because some of these, I could only imagine after facing 1,000 young kids screaming at you, yelling for pictures, you would eventually flip out, right? You can only take so much, and so maybe I'd be that one kid, and so I didn't want to do that, and I thought, well, I had the chance, but not today. So let's take from that and maybe learn that, hey, it's not about family, it's not about friends, it's about me, my relationship to God, and even going deeper, maybe your spouse. And so I know several people in this congregation that their spouse doesn't go to church, and they said, well, I'm not going to let what you have affect what I'm doing. I'm going to still serve God and go to church, and be one. And it's a neat example. It's a sad example, but it is still somewhat neat. So, okay, let's get into kind of our main players tonight. We're going to look at King Asa and his reign. Neat guy. A lot of neat things. We're going to note he's not perfect, just like anybody. David was a man after God's own heart and had a lot of neat things, but he messed up, right? And he messed up, as we would say, on a huge scale. Asa's going to be the same way, but there are some neat things about him. Really, taking that idea that we just looked at, that's why I kind of put in there, he who loves father or mother more than me, Asa's going to have to deal with this, right? In his actual example, his mother is going to be awful, and he's going to have to take care of it. And so we'll look at that in a few minutes. So we look at Asa, so he's the son of Abijam, grandson of Rehoboam, and he's the great-grandson of Solomon. So we're several generations now away from Solomon and the kind of the forefathers of the kingdom. What's interesting to note, his name, it means healer, and it's going to be very well applicable here that he's going to be healing the kingdom here in Judah and bringing them back out of the way of idol worship and Baal worship and Asherah worship, and he's going to bring them back to the worship of God and kind of cleanse that old thing. And he's really going to be a healing king here, which is going to be quite refreshing because everyone else seems like they're doing evil and all these negative things. So reading with me in 1 Kings chapter 15 and verse 9, it says, so in the 20th year of Jeroboam, the king of Israel, Asa began to reign as king of Judah. And it says in verse 10, and he reigned 41 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Maacah, the daughter of Absalom. And so we see he's going to have a long reign. And what's interesting to note, his first 10 years, albeit are going to be part of him when he was a child and he wasn't old enough to reign, are going to be very peaceful and very prosperous. And you thought, well, what was the reason? Is because he looked to God and he did what God would want him to do. And he didn't kind of look to other people. As we looked out, notice in Jeroboam and Rehoboam, they kind of took counsel in friends or family. They weren't like Solomon and decided to kind of hold back and say, well, I think I know a little bit better, and said, no, well, I'm going to trust what God has to say. And then maybe like Solomon, he says, no, I don't want to trust in women or trust in myself and fall for my own kind of sins and the things that I have that are blemishes. And so he's not going to be, as we mentioned, a perfect king, but he's going to be mentioned, reading with me in verse 11. And Asa did what was right in the sight of the Lord, like David, his father. And David would have been his, what, great-great-grandson? So looked after his father. And so he said, hey, that's who I want to be. And I read his, maybe his writings, and was taught the law and would have been that. So Asa is just going to have this great heart. So let's look at his first several years of reign. Now that he's, will be picking up, we don't know exactly what age he started at, but he's got a mess to clean up, and he's going to do that as soon as he's able and becomes to the age. Paul, do you know off by a chance when a king would have been the right age to start reigning? Right.
Here, what I would recommend to you, Josiah, blah, blah. And so there isn't an age, as far as I know, for a king. They just, the 40, the 12, the 26.
Yeah, because Asa's going to have a queen mother, is how they kind of describe her. So who knows what age he is, but we just know that his first 10 years, he's going to have kind of this neat thing of just cleansing, kind of like Jesus cleansed the table, or the temple. He's got to kind of do some of that of his own. And then so in verse 12, and he also put away the male cult prostitutes from the land and removed all the idols which his fathers had made. And he also removed Maacah, his mother, from being queen mother because she had a horrid image, excuse me, as an Asherah. And Asa cut down her horrid image and burned it in the brook of Kidron. Kind of like, what does that sound like? Going back into the Old Testament, kind of like what Moses did, right? And Moses did something similar like that. Maybe we'll have to do a little review of Genesis and Exodus next. And so he did just really neat things, and that's kind of why if you note through the animation here really quickly, I put this picture from Solomon, or Rehoboam looking at the idol, and then Asa's like, nah, that's not happening. And he's going to do great things. He's going to put away these things. So he's going to remove his mother, and Asherah was a fertility goddess, and he's going to burn it down. He's going to put it in the brook of Kindred. Just get rid of it. Doesn't need to be any part of what I'm going to have as reign, as king. And so he's going to do neat things. And then he's going to try to do something, but he can't necessarily do it all the way. I mean, he's going to put his best foot forward. He's going to try to take away the high places. And so in verse 14, he says, but the high places were not taken away. Nevertheless, the heart of Asa was wholly devoted to the Lord all of his days. Interesting to note here, it says the high places were taken away, right? And you think, well, that seems pretty plain and clear. Turn over to 2 Chronicles 14. Man, it's getting frustrating when I type in little, I like to first know what the issues are. Risa, can I get to you in a second? What the issues are for certain things. Someone will use, and they'll use here that, what's the issue? Yeah, that's my issue. Second Chronicles 14 is going to say he did remove the high places from the cities. So you got to follow me. Just a little patience. Yeah, and that's what I'm going to show you, that there's the contradictories. Yeah, that's from 2 Chronicles. Just bear with me. I know what I said. I mess up a lot of the times what I say, but I did not, I promise you, that time. 2 Chronicles 14 and verse 5. And he said, he also removed the high places, which was what I was trying to allude to, the high places and the incense altars from at the cities of Judah, and the kingdom was undisturbed under him. That word up there eradicates my word. So don't quote me from scripture. But it's going to say here that he did successfully take the high places away. But what I mentioned, what Risa is commenting on in 1 Kings, that it says he wasn't able to. Well, wouldn't you see there'd be a contradictory right there, right? There'd be an issue. Well, that's the thing, and what my comment is, and a lot of commentators will agree on, is maybe he tried to get rid of it, but it wasn't possible to do it fully, and he wasn't able to get rid of it all, because that'd be kind of hard to know all the high places, and you couldn't really stop maybe some rogue people that get out there and do it, so maybe it was still present. So there is a contradiction, so I appreciate you guys trying to catch me, but I was trying to make a point that there is maybe a slight contradiction that people will catch on, and they'll use it as, well, hey, there's one of those things that the Bible's wrong, and it's full of fables and just stories, and they're neat stories, but there's nothing there. Well, no, if you go to the commentaries and you look at the context of it, yes, he tried to do it, but it's one of those fruitful things is, I remember, Paul, you were telling a story that you were in Israel, and you were told, were you at a mosque or something like that, and they told you couldn't pray?
Oh, yeah, actually, in their main one there, the Dome of the Rock.
Okay.
And as a Christian, you're not allowed to pray there. And then it's easily as big as this room, probably bigger, and they have a round barricade made out of wood or oak or whatever, teak or something. You can see it kind of in the middle, but you can't touch it. But there are stairs that you can go down, and the rock is exposed. You can touch it. It is said to be, who really knows, that's the rock where Abraham sacrificed Isaac.
Mm. And you were told you couldn't pray, right?
You're not allowed to do a lot of things. If you're, I don't care if you're with a female and you're around, wife, child, you're not even allowed to hold hands. Affection, you cannot pray. I went down there and thought, you cannot know.
Exactly. So it's kind of like with Asa, you can't know. There's a huge, I see a gem, there's a huge college scandal, right, where agents from the NBA are paying certain high school players to go to a college because they know they can set them up for the NBA, and they're paying them to go to these schools, and a lot of the heat is falling on these college coaches, but the college coaches are saying, hey, we are responsible for a lot of things, but we can't know everything the family and the player does. We don't put them on 24-hour, 7 days a week, 365 surveillance, right? And so they're kind of playing the, I'm gonna guess they're lying because I believe this is kind of a big part of what they should know. But they're saying that, hey, we can't know everything. Jim? So we don't know for sure. Commentators will say it. Scholars will say one way. But that's why I tried to kind of trick you into that. And I'm glad Risa caught me. I wasn't trying to actually lead you astray. But we just got two different kind of accounts. I thought it was just neat because it was one of those things that people bring up along the line. Risa?
2
Kings 12. Sure.
And they
Yep.
He couldn't control
everything. Exactly. So he's just a king. Rhonda? Yeah, they didn't put it up on a meetup app and say, hey, meet us at Panera Bread at 7 o'clock in Tacoma and we'll meet you there. So I wasn't expecting that much on that subject, but I'm glad I brought it up because that's good to know. And so it's just good things to think about. And the enemies of the Bible and of Christ, mostly atheists, they're trying to find any kind of little thing, right? And so it's just, you know, being aware, like with Saul or with David and Jonathan and just craziness that they take. So I'm glad that that was there and that we can settle that. So it's just really neat and some interesting things. And so Asa, just as we noticed, just has a great heart. And he's trying to do the right thing. He's trying to get rid of the foreign gods, the foreign worship, and trying to do as much as he can from his place of power to get Judah back in line with what the forefathers and what God would have them. And so just really, really neat. And so he's even going to continue on. I'm gonna switch clickers. That's starting to. He's even going to, you know, what he's going to do is he's going to make this huge celebration. He's going to. Oh my goodness. And so he's going to do that. There we go. And so he's going to have this huge celebration. So in 2 Chronicles, are you still there if you haven't gone back to 1 Kings? So in chapter 15 and in verse 10, we find out a little bit more information about Asa and kind of the first 10 years. And so verse 10, he says, so they assembled at Jerusalem in the third month of the 15th year of Asa's reign, and they sacrificed to the Lord that day 700 oxen and 7,000 sheep from the spoil that they had brought. In that, we won't turn there, but an earlier chapter, they had raided Egypt and they'd taken some things and they brought that there. And because of the success, they're gonna of the looting, they're gonna give it sacrifice to God. And so, and then in verse 12, they entered the covenant to seek the Lord, their God of their fathers, with all their heart and soul. And whoever who would not seek the Lord, God of Israel, shall be put to death, whether small or great, man or woman. And so he just said, hey, this is how it's going to be, and here's where it's going to be at. Okay, I might have to move up here. I cannot get, there it goes, the clicker to work. Apologize. So, and then in verse 15, it says, moreover, they made an oath to the Lord with a loud voice, with shouting and with trumpets and with horns. And so just great things in kind of healing a nation and healing his group of people. And so there is going to be some things he's got to deal with, some difficulties, just like with his fathers and then with his children. There's going to be years and just years of wars. And Asa, and we'll look at Baasha later, they're just going to be at war, constantly fighting over and over again. And this is actually where Asa is going to make his kind of first misstep. It's eventually probably going to maybe get too much for him, and he's going to misstep, and he's going to try to take the tide of the battle, the momentum, and he's going to try to make some backdoor deals, and that's going to be kind of his downfall. And so he's going to have just years and years of war. So in turning back to 1 Kings chapter 15, we'll look at the account here. We'll look at verse 17 and 18. And how Asa tries to turn the tables and try to get around Baasha and his kind of reign from the north. He's going to make an alliance that God's not going to look too kindly on that. So in verse 17, it said, now Baasha, king of Israel, went up against Judah and mortified Ramah in order to prevent anyone from going and out of coming into Asa, king of Judah. So he's got them locked in. He's got them trapped. They're not going anywhere. And so Asa maybe panics or needs to deal with this. Because maybe there's probably many things that could come at it. They could hold deliveries from coming in or going out. And There's no way of getting out of the city or even getting there. And so he's got them pretty much landlocked in, and they're not going anywhere. And so Asa needs to figure out how to deal with this. And he, as we've noted over and over and over again before him, where should people seek their counsel? Where should these kings seek counsel? With God. Where do all the kings that fall short seek counsel? From man. And so here's going to be his first misstep. And we can't understate, and I can't understate in this class enough, the one thing, probably the greatest gift these kings did, and the records of this, is trusting in God is so very important. It's vital to being a great Christian and a neat Christian and trying to do things right. And when we start to rely on things of man, let me give you an example that I kind of caught myself is when I started first preaching and Paul was teaching me and I was using, man, I went back and looked at my sermons. It's all commentators. It's all books. It's all things. I would use a scripture and then I would use man's thoughts on the scriptures to preach from. Man, I don't know how you people stomached it, but it drove me nuts. And it would be like these people that when they have an issue, they go to a self-help section instead of going to the Bible. And so someone brought up the issue, well, how do you want to lose 10 pounds? Where do you go to the Bible to figure that out? I could probably get you there. You probably won't like it, and it's not going to be, you know, run 5 miles every day. That's not going to be in there. But there are encouraging things. So let's try to get to the Bible first. Let's try to get to God first rather than things of man, things that we might be comfortable with, but let's go with the uncomfortable because the reward for that is so much greater. And so we can't underscore that enough. And so I'm gonna pound it into your head because I'm trying to pound it in my own head. Well, with these guys, but there are some minor things that we can pick up on. And this is kind of one of them is relying on others. So in 1 Kings 15 and verse 18, then Asa took all the silver and gold which he had accumulated from his first 10 years when he followed God, when he did the right things. He had accumulated all these things. And he decided, well, now I'm going to use that for something other than God's work, and I'm going to use it to bribe someone else. And so he took all the silver and the gold which were left in the treasuries of the house of the Lord and the treasuries of the king's house and delivered them into the hands of his servant. And then what King Asa is going to do is he's going to send them to Syria, to the king at Damascus, and he's going to say, hey, here's all this bribe money. Why don't you come in, betray your treaty that you have, your alliance you have with the north, and why don't you backstab them a little bit and we can maybe turn the tides? You know, I think if you were just from a pure standpoint of war and of being a king, think, man, Asa, you did the right call. You were in a very difficult situation. You turned the tides. But knowing from the viewpoint of God and from the bird's eye view that we have, it wasn't the right step. And so all these years of war, he's going to do a treaty with Syria because they had a treaty with Israel, so he's going to maybe double up what they have. Well, I'll pay you what they're paying you times two, right? Or whatever it, plus 500. And so he broke it for gold and for silver. And so Syria then is going to attack the north. They're like, hey, they got the better deal. Well, we don't have to worry about Israel now. We'll just keep going with Judah. And so they broke their deal. They attacked the north. And Israel is going to have to withdraw from their siege that they had. And so they're going to withdraw from Judah. But the question is, and what we stated earlier, is should have Asa have done that? From his kingdom standpoint and his people, yeah, probably, maybe. But from God's standpoint, from the really his first 10 years of reign, he just decided to make one tiny misstep. And that's where we find out that Asa wasn't a flawless dude. And so he makes mistakes just like the best of us. And so he wanted it. So turning back over to 2 Chronicles in chapter 16. What we haven't noted and what I haven't noted is a lot of the times after we get through these kings, the writer will put in, and aren't the rest of his stories of the historians written in the book of Chronicles. It actually pops up several times, and so we just kind of bypass because we know that the other account in Chronicles is here. And so Esau is going to be rebuked pretty harshly for what he did there with the Syrians. And so in verse 7, "And at that time Hananiah the seer came to Asa, king of Judah, and said to him, because you have relied on the king of Aram and not have relied on the Lord your God, therefore the army of the king of Aram has escaped out of your hand." And so, woo, we maybe a quite misstep. And so you've chosen this place. This is where it'll work. And so he's going to imprison the prophet. The guy doing that said, "Hey, I don't have to listen to this. I'm the king. I'm going to put you in jail so I don't have to worry about it, so I can sleep good at night." And so he's going to throw him in there, and they'll have the wars. And so on in verse 12, Asa is going to succumb to something, and something's going to happen to him. He's going to have a disease. And so Asa became diseased in his feet, and his disease was severe. Yet even in his disease, he did not seek the Lord, but the physicians. He didn't even learn. I mean, the man, the prophet came to him and said, "Hey, you trusted a man, you trusted in your own thoughts, you didn't come to me, and so you're going to get punished for it." When he gets punished for it, he still didn't learn his lesson. It's like a kid touching the hot stove when the mom says, "Don't touch it," and it gets burned, and then still goes back and touches the burner again, because maybe he oddly liked it or something, but you didn't learn his lessons. And so he's searched for their kind of remedies of man. You know, maybe there was someone who can lay hands on it. And so we don't know exactly what the disease might have been, but it might have been gout or gangrene, an infection of some sort. I'll spare you pictures because those are quite disgusting. And so whoever it might have been, it was a disease in his feet and it was pretty substantial, but he went to magical rituals or maybe the herbs that they had, the remedies there, but he didn't rely on God, and his failure to seek to him is going to be kind of contributed to his death. And that's all coming from InterVarsity Press, which is a neat little commentary that they had on this. And most other commentators will agree and say that it was some kind of infection in his feet. And so he wasn't flawless. And so he's going to be succumbed to this, and he's going to eventually be dead. But he's going to have kind of this honoring in his death, and he's going to be honored by the people. In 2 Chronicles 16 and verse 14, it says, "And they buried him in his own tomb, which he had cut out for himself in the city of David. And they laid him in the resting place, which he had filled with spaces of various kinds, blended by the perfumer's art. They had made of, and then they made a very great fire for him." So they just honored him for being a neat king, kind of healing the people and bringing them back from wickedness and evilness and idolatry, and bringing them back to kind of the way of God. And so it was just kind of neat. And I started thinking about this. Paul, you could use this in your setting your house in order. He even thought about it. He said, "Hey, I'm getting old. I'm going to kind of blow myself up and make myself own plot." And so he started thinking about towards the end. And so Asa is just going to be a neat king, kind of gone the way of like all the others, that maybe like Solomon, that eventually the things caught up, all the wives caught up to Solomon, maybe with Asa, and just he got a little desperate and made kind of the same mistake, and then realized, well, it kind of worked for me. I mean, I did get us out of the situation. Making this backdoor deal with Syria kind of got us out of the predicament. So maybe my way rather than God's way worked. And then he realized, well, it doesn't actually work. But the people were highly respected of him, given a neat death filled with spices and fire. And I thought that'd be a cool way to go out. And so I'll put that in my letter to Amy if I passed it. I want a great fire, just huge, and just spray my cologne that she likes all over the air, and we'll call it good. And so Asa is just going to be a really neat queen. So in our last kind of 7 or 8 minutes, let's look at Baasha and really the short thing that he has. And man, just an evil dude, really, just to be honest with you. Just not a great guy. Not like Ahab bad. I mean, we're getting pretty crazy, but he's up there. And so how he gets to reign, we noted earlier from, let's see if you got a good memory from 30 minutes ago. What tribe was Baasha from? all we noted is really quickly, there's 12 of them. This one starts with an I. Issachar, very good. I had to coax you all the way to, I was going to have to start spelling it. We're going to get in trouble because I started thinking, how am I going to spell Issachar? So he's from the tribe of Issachar. And so we don't know a ton about him personally. His name means boldness, and that kind of comes to fruition really kind of going after the king. It's kind of bold, right? Going after the king, murder him, and then take over. You got to have some boldness. You got to have some courage. We don't know exactly what his role in the kingdom was. And I'll note a couple of commentators that will say this. He's going to reign for 24 years, so he's going to have an extended reign. But people will mention maybe he was a commander in one of the armies I think McClintock and Isby will note this. They're just kind of making an assumption to maybe rise to this power, to have the backing. You might have had to have been in the kingdom and been a prominent member. We don't know for sure, but he might have been one of the commander of the forces that was able to go in and attack. So in 1 Kings 15, we'll note just the few verses, and then in 16 of Baasha and his kind of, he has an extended reign, but short part of here. So in verse 29 of 1 Kings 15, and it says, "And it came about, as soon as he was king, he struck down all the household of Jeroboam." Why is that notable? Okay, so there is no survivors, but, Risa? Very good. So if you remember back to Jeroboam, we talked about that towards the end when he started acting iniquity. God promised Jeroboam that all the males would be destroyed, right? And so we kind of see the fulfillment of prophecy. And so he did not leave to Jeroboam any persons alive until he had destroyed them, according to the word of the Lord spoken through Ahijah. And so just God's working through prophecy, working through, and we can kind of see it being fulfilled through Baasha. And so that's how he kind of comes to thing. He comes to kingdom through murder, through killing King Nadab. And so we don't really know much about his backstory, how he gets here, but we do know just a few things about it and how God's going to punish him for acting unruly and evilly. And man, how it's described and how God's going to get rid of the bodies is going to be very graphic and kind of disgusting. So let's get there. So in 1 Kings 15, read with me in 34, the last verse there. "And he did evil in the sight of the Lord and walked in the way of Jeroboam and in his sins, which he had made Israel sin." So just kind of falling after kind of the chain. And we'll note that all of kings of Israel are going to go this way. They're going to be a wicked king. And so just kind of the ending of the beginning of the end. And so we see just kind of the next verses that Jehu, the prophet's going to come up against him. And he's going to speak to God what his going to be his ending. And said, "Inasmuch in verse 2 of 16, as I exalted you from the dust," which maybe he may have had humble means, that there wasn't, he didn't come from much, maybe he wasn't from a prominent house. "And you have walked in the way of Jeroboam and made my people Israel sin, provoking me to anger with their sins. Behold, I will consume Baasha to his house, and I will make your house like the house of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat." And so what will happen to Jeroboam's house? Well, he just did it. He wiped him out, right? So the same thing's going to happen to his house. And so, but the way it's done is very notable. So in verse 4, "And anyone of Baasha who dies in the city, the dogs will eat." Okay, that doesn't sound fun. "And anyone who dies in the field, the birds of the heavens will eat." So the crows are going to get fed, and the dogs are going to be fed. I thought that puts Matthew chapter 6, kind of the end there, to the little thing that God feeds the birds. Like, you don't worry about us. That kind of puts a different picture there, right? Going all the way back to Baasha and his reign. And so basically his family's going to be food. Which, man, it would be, you're getting prophesied this. Wouldn't you think you'd want to turn your life around right about now? And so he does evil in the sight of the Lord, and he's kind of made his bed, and now he's got to lay in it. And so in verse 6, and Baasha slept with his father and was buried in Tirzah, which is in central Israel. What's interesting to note about this city, it's also mentioned in Song of Solomon, chapter 6 and verse 4, describes it as a beautiful city. And so, don't know exactly what would make it so beautiful, but it was beautiful. It actually ended up being the capital of kind of his reign that he set there and said, hey, this is where I'm going to kind of hold my reign here. And so, we can kind of see from the negative standpoint, and we don't know much about what evil he did, probably just idolatry and not following along with God's commandments and all that along that line. But it's kind of interesting. We finally get a good king in Asa and kind of the missteps he had. But with Baasha, you kind of have the blended of the good with the bad. And so we're 10 minutes early. That's perfect. Just a couple of news and notes. Jim, if you want to cut the recording, you